Symposium West presents Session 15, Mormon Cinema at 5, A Health Report, a panel discussion with Scott Denhalter, Richard Dutcher, John Charles Duffy, and John Bernhard.
Again, I'd like to welcome you all here today. By way of introduction, my name is Scott Denhalter, and I'm the moderator and a panelist today. I will be, by way of introduction, I have a master's degree in English from the U of U, which has proven very lucrative for me, and father of six, grandfather of three, and an unrepentant film buff. Today we'll be hearing from, we'll be discussing the health of Mormon cinema, where it stands today, where we've come from, and where we hope to be headed. John Charles Duffy has a Bachelor of Arts degree in English from BYU, an MA in English from the U of U, and also. Also lucrative, very much so, yes. But you're at least, I chickened out, you're going on, and he's also getting, he's a doctoral candidate at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, getting an MA and a PhD in religious studies. Richard Dutcher is with us today. Of course, Richard did a couple of movies, and what were they again? God's Army, of course, Brigham City, and then his latest, States of Grace. Richard is now working on several projects, including The Prophet, which he is honor-bound not to discuss today. And I'm kidding. Richard has another lucrative degree in film from BYU. And we'll be with us discussing these subjects today as well. And John Bernhard has a marketing and advertising professional in Los Angeles. Graduated from Utah Valley State College and the University of Phoenix with degrees in marketing and advertising. He recently contributed to the last issue of Dialogue with a with the article, what was the essay again?
It's called
You, Jack, and Peter. And we'll kind of be moving in the order where I'll make a few comments about the nature of the subject today, and then we'll move on to John, and then to John Charles, and then to Richard. I want to make sure that I mention that this summer there will be a short film contest sponsored by Sunstone. There's no entry fee, and there will be a $300 prize in the documentary category and a $300 prize offered to the fiction category. The due date will be July 1st, and they're looking for anything from 1 to 8 minutes. So that should be exciting. We're also going to do a lot. We've done quite a bit at this symposium on Mormonism in pop culture, and we're going to be doing even more this summer. I think that the definition that we've kind of landed on for the subject of Mormon cinema, which my first question was, well, what exactly is Mormon cinema? It's been defined as feature-length fiction film with LDS subject matter produced by Latter-day Saints independently of the church and released theatrically. So that's kind of our working category. Of course, we all know that Richard's first film in recent years. There have been films about Mormons prior to this. We, of course, can go back to 1905, and we have anti-Mormon films, Trapped by the Mormons, things like that. But we also have certain Hollywood films like Brigham Young that involve the subject of Mormonism, but not necessarily done by Mormons. So with this most complete definition, we'd have to give Richard the nod as being the father of this category. And Since then, Richard has directed and produced these two more films that I mentioned. Brigham City, which was a deeply, for me, a very deeply affecting film. Other films have been made since then, to the tune of about 20 to 30 films that would fit into this category. I played around with how to describe maybe. We have a category of course comedy where there's just strictly following typical Hollywood formula, comedy formula, and then drama where there was a more serious and perhaps not so formulaic presentation of theme and plot. The best way to break down Mormon cinema is probably those films that contain Kirby Hayborn and those that don't. All of these films are to be considered pretty much independent. I was under the impression that possibly Other Side of Heaven was a studio release, but Richard cleared that up for me. They were actually an independent film as well, and received studio distribution deal later on in the game. I've enjoyed several films in these categories, and been very disappointed in several more. Actually, many more. And I think what for me personally. What I value in a film is that it deliver me something that I may be unexpected to me, that I can't actually speak the next line or know exactly what's going to happen. And very often films that surprise me are films that stay with me a long time. Films that follow a formula are less gratifying. And I think that for the most part, if you look at the comedy category, there seems to have been the decision made somewhere along the line that the typical Hollywood formula, comedy formula, is what was going to work best in terms of as a business model. But that has not actually played out, and I think that what's become evident is that the surprise and delight for Mormons to see themselves portrayed on the silver screen wore out rather quickly. And once it was no longer new, and then that first blush disappeared, Mormon audiences went to, at least as far as the comedy genre is concerned, went to films that followed the same formula but had bigger budgets and therefore greater production values. In the arena of dramas, I was very impressed with all of Richard's films. I enjoyed The Other Side of Heaven. I felt that film was well done. Some of the films that have been mentioned, I haven't seen. Charlie, I have not seen. Johnny Lingo, Out of Step. Best 2 Years. Again, that falls into one of those Kirby categories, and Latter Days is a film that would fall into this category. I have not yet seen that, but Work in the Glory was certainly a dramatic film. But the ones that have stayed with me are the ones that seem to deal not so much. Even though there are trappings, Mormon trappings, because the characters themselves are Mormon, but the films that have stuck with me are those films where we're dealing with basic human themes, themes of guilt, themes of redemption, something that where we could actually change characters out. Maybe that's not true. You can't really change some of these characters out. They have to be Mormon, but because the nuance of these themes is very Mormon. I want to move on very quickly and pass this on to John.
Surprise, leave it right there. It'd be okay. Well, I appreciate the chance to be here. I appreciate the organizers of the Sunstone Symposium for giving me the opportunity to contribute. I'm relatively young. I don't have necessarily the body of work that these gentlemen beside me do, which makes it all the more gratifying for me to be here and share the panel with these gentlemen.
I'm relatively young, too.
Well, the beard, right? Well, what I think the perspective it all brings to the discussion is that I've been, since my earliest moments, a pop culture junkie, just a voracious appetite for cinema, for films. And in 2000 and 2001, I was lucky enough to be at Ground Zero in Utah when Richard released his film God's Army. Generated a little bit of buzz, a little bit of controversy because of the way that it so honestly and unflinchingly portrayed Mormon ordinances and philosophies and kind of characters in some pretty everyday situations, missionaries serving in Los Angeles. And, at first I didn't see the film because my mom told me not to. And when I finally had the chance to see it, I had rented it on DVD long after it had come out in 2002. And I was really moved by just how honestly the story just moved along without worrying about the Mormon trappings of, well, can we talk about priesthood? Can we talk about garments? Can we talk about issues in LDS culture that are kind of taboo? And I was really impressed by the way that the two elders gave a blessing to the character that was suffering. I was really impressed with the struggle that one of the characters went through, and I was really moved by that. And, you know, I'd always been one of those guys, I probably have several hundred dollars worth of screenwriting, how-to books, and movie-making books, and all sorts of things on my shelves at home. And I've always had a dream of telling stories that had Mormon kind of threads woven through them, and seeing Richard's film kind of gave me new hope and kind of the idea that you can tell good stories and have the Mormon parts of the story be kind of organic to the story and not necessarily have be about the Mormon philosophies and the Mormon ordinances. With all that said, what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to let these gentlemen kind of get into the philosophy and the state of mind from the Mormon filmmaker perspective. What I'll talk about is where the box office is for a lot of these LDS films or LDS-themed films that have been out there in the last few years. Box office, of course, is a barometer that's not as important as it has been in the industry in Los Angeles in the past because of DVD sales and iPod podcasts, and now there's video on demand on the internet, and there's all sorts of things going on with cable television. So, a movie opening big and having a big weekend box office or a long box office over the span of the film, it's not necessarily the important barometer it was, but it's still kind of a good measuring stick to figure out, okay, once the movie does go to DVD or once the movie has had its theatrical run, is there going to be a life beyond the initial run that will bring revenue to the filmmakers? So with all that said, box office, what I'll do is I had an overhead prepared, but I'll just, instead of doing an overhead, I'll just kind of talk about what I've, some of the tables we have. Obviously, The Other Side of Heaven, which had the big distribution studio behind it when it was distributed, is kind of the champ in terms of how much it earned at the box office. It grossed out about $4.7 million. It's earned almost that much in terms of DVD sales, sales to cable channels, sales to airplanes and that type of thing, to airlines. Other movies, Work in the Glory, has done pretty well. God's Army, obviously, which was made on a shoestring back in the early 2000s, has done very well for itself in terms of profitability. Some of the movies like Singles Ward, The RM, some of those early Mormon-themed comedies that generated a lot of buzz and a lot of interest in the LDS community, especially in Utah and Southern California. Those movies did pretty well for themselves as well at the box office based on gross receipts compared to what their budget was. However, I just want to point out that Church Ball, Suits on the Loose, Mobsters and Mormons, some of these comedy genre films that have come out recently have pretty much been unmitigated flops. And the Church Ball especially, which had a budget nearing $1 million and had some big name actors like Gary, I mean not big name, they're obviously B or C level celebrities, but Gary Coleman, Fred Willard, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, some of these folks out of the Hollywood movie scene that have been in a lot of movies and have quite a following. Even with all those actors and the high production values and a bigger budget, Church Ball has pretty much stalled out at around $400,000 in gross receipts, which with $1 million budget, $400,000 plus marketing and that type of thing is not necessarily the recipe for a success. So that said, I think that the box office kind of, the returns, especially of the most recent movies, Saints and Soldiers was another one that had a pretty small budget, but it hasn't done nearly as well at the box office as the producers and the distributors of the movies would have thought. So with that said, let's see. Well, okay, yeah, I was going to point out that Kurt Hale, one of the people at Hailstorm Entertainment, who's been responsible for all these movies, especially the Kirby movies like he was talking about, which I think was a very interesting and funny point, he basically came out in the Deseret News in early March and said he's probably done funding and producing these comedy-type films through his Hailstorm Entertainment production wing. So I would say, and I would venture to say, that the LDS-themed comedy, the formulaic comedy that Scott was mentioning, is probably dying if it's not already flatlined in terms of finding audiences and things like that. And I agree with him. I think that with the sophistication nowadays of the Internet and Google and all the things that people have access to, audiences are very discerning. And I think that the movie business as a whole, I have a lot of contacts in Hollywood and Los Angeles who work, you know, a lot of them are LDS, some of them aren't. But the movie business as a whole is having a real identity crisis as far as how they're going to continue making movies that will capture the imaginations of moviegoers. I mean, King Kong, which was a huge budget movie and was expected to just blow the lid off records and things like that, was a kind of a disappointment in Hollywood. And it's, I would think that the reflection of these comedies and these kind of, you know, catering to the lowest common denominator type films like the RM and Single Word and Suits on the Loose and some of these, kind of the fact that they're failing nowadays is a demonstration to me that perhaps audiences are more sophisticated than they have been in the past, and that they're figuring out that there are other types of entertainment and places they can turn for honest and unflinching portrayals of what's going on in the world. So that's my comments on the box office. One of the things that Hollywood is worried about right now is they're trying to find stories to tell that are unique and fresh. Most of what comes out nowadays is rehashing of older stories or older movies or plays or books or things that have already been out there. I think that the LDS body of stories and the legends and the mythology that is behind our religion and our culture, there are so many good stories to tell, and there are so many interesting ways to tell stories based on the dramatic and cinematic stories that are told in the Book of Mormon, or the stories that are told from missionaries who come back from, you know, foreign missions and things where they were held up in subways. Or, I mean, there's all sorts of exciting thematic things that can be explored as part of Mormon film, which I think gives me encouragement or hope to be even more kind of honest and unflinching when I write my scripts. I have several in the works, and I have a first look deal with a production studio in Hollywood that people aren't afraid to talk about Mormonism. Angels in America is a perfect example of, I mean, that movie was so unflinching and the play it was based on, obviously, it was so unflinching and honest in the way that it portrayed a woman's testimony to a dying man and the issue of temple garments. It was also highly blasphemous and probably salacious in a lot of ways, but it told a really honest story about what Mormonism is about and what the people who believe in the Mormon faith actually believe. Another movie that's like that, of course, were Richard's movies, The God's Army and Brigham City. I loved Brigham City. I loved the noiristic. I mean, I think Richard made a movie that basically took a lot of the timeless structures in Hollywood of noir and murder and guilt and redemption, like Scott said, and he built it around a couple of Mormon characters and in a Mormon town. And I think that that scene at the end with the sacrament where I think Richard was the actor playing the part where he's up on the stand and everybody wouldn't take the sacrament until he did, was so powerful to me. And to show that in the silver screen as being an organic part of the story was a huge leap forward. And I think that there's going to be a lot more of that type of LDS filmmaking going on as people kind of get to a point where they need to be honest and unflinching in describing and telling the stories that they have. Another example of these types of phenomenon is Big Love. I mean, there's a lot of things about Big Love that are inaccurate, but there's a lot of things about that show and the way that they talk about Mormonism and Mormon tenets that are right on the money, almost to the point where I'm sitting with my non-Mormon wife, and she turns to me and says, "Is that how it really is? Is that what they say when they talk about Relief Society and young men, young women?" And I have to say, yeah, that's exactly what it's called. And they're using the right terms. Now, like I said, there's parts of it that aren't accurate, but I think that the fact that the Big Love has these Mormon philosophies and Mormon just everyday things sprinkled through the scripts is a really promising thing from a perspective of LDS filmmakers trying to get their stories told. The bottom line from this particular portion of my remarks is that LDS filmmakers need to search out great stories. And I think that it'll attract actors, producers, people with credentials inside Hollywood, people who have access to funding to tell these stories in a way and market them in a way where they can reach mass audiences. It all comes back to the story, and it all comes back to filmmakers not caving in to propaganda or feeling like they have to proselytize a religion or any of those types of things. I think if they just tell the honest truth about the religion, their faith, its incredible origins, and so forth, I think that the stories will kind of rise to the top. One final point is, and this is probably, a little naive, but I live down here in L.A. and I have access to the scene, so to speak, especially among kids and people that are younger and in my age. I'm 30, and so I'm kind of tied into all these junior-level producers and junior-level production assistants and things in Hollywood. And Jared Hess and John Heater, who we know from Napoleon Dynamite fame, are really, really, really becoming prominent players in the kind of young up-and-comer scene in Hollywood. John Heater, for instance, who played Napoleon Dynamite, he's the actor. He's currently in a movie called The Benchwarmers, which is a big-budget comedy written and produced by people that are non-LDS, and he's been able to be in the movie, participate in the film, and not compromise his beliefs. In a recent article in Premiere Magazine, he came out and said, there's a lot of people that look at me as kind of a fool for being so true to my beliefs as a Mormon. But he said, that's just the way it is, and I'm not going to stop working in Hollywood because of the way I am, and I'm not going to be afraid to tell people that I don't drink, I don't party, I'm not going to be around the influences in Hollywood that kind of taint people's souls, so to speak. That he's going to continue to plow forward. Plowing forward in that light, he's got several movies lined up which are all big buzz type comedies and movies. Monster House is a movie coming out in a couple of months. It's a horror comedy, probably a PG-13 rating, but he plays the lead role in that movie. Another one is Mama's Boy with Diane Keaton, who's an Academy Award winning actress, and it's being directed by several high profile directors and producers in Hollywood. It's Diane Keaton and Jeff Daniels in this movie, Mama's Boy, with them. He's in a movie called School for Scoundrels in 2007 with Billy Bob Thornton. I mean, odd pairing there. Blades of Glory, he plays an ice skater with Will Ferrell. I mean, these are all movies starring big names, big actors that have the potential to have a pretty widespread audience. And he's a very, very open and devout Mormon and isn't afraid to speak about it to people when they ask. And it's a big departure from the past from people like Aaron Eckhart and Neil LaBute, who are both LDS. Who knows if they really are or not, if they've been excommunicated or whatnot. But they were so afraid to talk about their ties to the Mormon Church, I think, that they lost an opportunity, perhaps, to kind of build a profile inside Hollywood and inside the movie industry in terms of what Mormonism is all about, how Mormons can be successful in that field and that type of thing. With that said, Jared Hess, the director of Napoleon Dynamite, he's actually got a film coming out this spring called Nacho Libre, starring Jack Black. And the buzz around this film, again, among the younger culture in Hollywood, is it's going to be a huge hit. Jack Black, in his podcast from the set of Nacho Libre, basically says, Jared Hess and his production partners are all LDS, they're all Mormons. The set's a very docile place. It's a very peaceful place. There's not all the crises and things that happen on regular Hollywood sets. And he said, and it's a refreshing change of pace for an actor in Hollywood to be able to participate in a production like that. So I think that his reputation, Jared Hess's reputation, he's building himself a nice, credible cachet in the business where he'll make movies and do things and produce films that actors can feel safe in, and they can come and work, and they don't have to worry about all the distractions and all the horrible things that they have to deal with on regular Hollywood-style sets. So I'm excited to watch the careers of those two guys develop. I've not met either one of them. I've been at events and things where they've been in the other room or whatnot. I've never, ever been able to search them out. But the fact that there's two openly devout Mormons and such high-profile, up-and-coming roles inside the Hollywood system personally gives me hope that eventually when a screenplay or a screenwriter or a young filmmaker has a story like God's Army or something along those lines where Mormons are just organic to the story, and it's not about Mormonism, it's not about Joseph Smith or about polygamy or the things that are going on. It's just Mormons play roles in the movie and the part in the things about Mormonism that make them who they are play out on the screen. I think there's a lot of hope for that. So while it's clear that Mormon cinema is at a crossroads, I think the genre will continue to plod along. I think the efforts of people like Richard and others in Utah and on the West Coast will continue to nurse Mormon cinema to its full potential. And I would venture to say that within the next 10 to 15 years, we may see a feature film starring a Daniel Day-Lewis about Joseph Smith that is friendly and honest and unflinching in the way that it portrays his life, and it won't be something where the church will have to come out and, I mean, they probably will, but because they seem to want to control the stories. But I think that the idea is that movies like that will be made outside of the Utah culture, outside of that system in Utah where people are so afraid to speak out and to make movies that are honest. And I think that's going to happen. So if that's all I have to say. I'm gracious to turn the time to these guys, and I want to hear what they have to say. So.
I want to think about the state of LDS cinema by asking the question, what is LDS cinema trying to accomplish? And I want to approach that question by way of comparison. Initially, at least, I want to turn our attention away from LDS cinema to take a look at cinema specific to other religious communities, Christian cinema and Jewish cinema. If we identify the ends that Jews and Catholics and evangelical Protestants are pursuing through cinema, what will that reveal about the ends that Mormons are pursuing or are not pursuing through LDS cinema? Let's start with Christian cinema. This term is used both by evangelical Protestants and Catholics. Some Catholics also speak more specifically of Catholic cinema, but others are content to speak more generically of Christian cinema, partly, it seems, in the interest of collaborating with evangelicals who share their general concerns about the state of contemporary culture and of contemporary cinema. When many Catholics and evangelical Protestants call for a Christian cinema, these calls typically arise out of a perception that Hollywood cinema is indifferent to religion, hostile, or immoral. Christian cinema thus serves in this vision as a vehicle for resisting secularism and moral drift. Proponents of Christian cinema, in this sense, are overt about their interest in using film for evangelization, for bearing witness of Christian truth, and promoting Christian values. There are, generally speaking, two different approaches to Christian evangelization through cinema. One is to develop Christian cinema as an alternative to Hollywood cinema. The other is to seek a greater Christian influence within Hollywood. Evangelical Protestants have historically relied chiefly on the first strategy, that of creating an alternative cinema. This strategy is consistent with Christian fundamentalism's impulse for cultural separation. This impulse is represented, for instance, by Dave Cristiano, a director and producer of Christian films prominent in the evangelical subculture. Cristiano laments that there are no specifically Christian theaters, in the same way that there are Christian bookstores or Christian colleges. And he complains that many Christians patronize what he calls the devil's movies, meaning films that have nudity in them and curse the name of their Lord. For several decades, Christian filmmakers have cultivated a separate cinema for evangelicals by creating films intended to be screened in churches. Films like A Thief in the Night, a 1972 apocalyptic thriller about life on Earth after the rapture. Many of these films targeted youth, all had heavy-handed didactic or evangelistic agendas. Films of this class became more slick during the 1980s and 90s. At the same time, technologies for home film viewing, VCRs, DVDs, and the creation of Christian television stations made it possible for Christian films to be shown outside churches in settings resembling mainstream media. Recently, some Christian films have broken through to the big screen, films such as Left Behind or The Omega Code. Because these films are still strongly evangelistic, one critic calls them crafty conversion, they have received poor reviews outside evangelical circles and some poor reviews from within evangelical circles. It also appears that these films are primarily preaching to the choir, meaning that most of those who go to see them are already conservative Christian. One important function of these films for evangelicals is to legitimize their subculture, literally by giving evangelicalism screen time in mainstream venues. Some Catholics have similarly moved to create alternatives to Hollywood cinema, though the volume of Catholic films in this class does not begin to approach that of the films produced by and for the evangelical subculture. One such effort is the film Thérèse, produced about 3 years ago by a small independent company called Luke Films. The filmmakers, a Catholic couple living in Beaverton, Oregon, boast that Thérèse has been shown on 300 screens to date. Pope John Paul II was one of the first to see it in a special screening at the Vatican. The second strategy for promoting Christian cinema, increasing Christian increasing Christian influence in Hollywood is most prominently championed by Roman Catholic Barbara Nicolosi. Nicolosi is executive director of Act One, Inc., an organization that offers workshops for aspiring Christian screenwriters and training for Christians who wish to become film executives. Act One's mission is to groom competent professionals for Hollywood, where, quote, they may be witnesses of Christ and the truth to their fellow artists and the global culture, end quote. Ultimately, Act One sees itself as pursuing a long-term strategy for cultural renewal, that is, to reverse the secular humanism that has overrun the creative community. Nicolosi has been very critical of independent Christian films like Left Behind and Therese. She was much more favorably impressed with Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ and Disney's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Nicolosi argues that the world does not need a Christian cinema so much as it needs Christians in cinema, people who will approach Hollywood as a missionary territory to preach and teach and minister. Of the two approaches to Christian cinema I've described, LDS cinema most closely resembles the first, developing an alternative cinema to be shown ideally in mainstream theaters, but failing that to be distributed for home viewing through the LDS market. There is a notable difference, however. Catholics and Protestants pursuing conservative approaches to Christian cinema are explicit about their intention to evangelize or transform the culture. Certainly, most Latter-day Saints would share conservative Catholics and Protestants' concerns about the state of the culture and about negative influences coming out of Hollywood. But LDS filmmakers are not nearly so quick to describe their work in terms of evangelization. On the contrary, LDS filmmakers take some pains to disclaim evangelistic intentions. How many times have we heard LDS filmmakers say that their intention is not to proselytize? Nicolosi's Act One, Inc. is perfectly clear in its mission statement that it aims to bear witness of Christ and the truth. Luke Film's website prominently features the motto, Inspiration Through Spiritual Entertainment. By contrast, the websites of the two major LDS film distributors, Excel and Hailstorm, use no religious language. They say nothing along the lines of having a mission to promote gospel values in entertainment, or even as generically spiritual a goal as being inspirational. Why is that? Why do LDS filmmakers, by contrast to Catholics and evangelicals, seem reticent to describe their work in evangelistic terms? Instead of evangelism, the rationale that I hear used most often to explain the need for LDS cinema is a variation of an argument that LDS literary critic Michael Austin used in the early 1990s. The argument is an appeal to contemporary multiculturalist sensitivities. The appeal goes like this. At a time when society recognizes the importance of representing minority experience in literature and film, shouldn't films about LDS experience appear in theaters, along with films about Jewish experience, or African-American, or Greek-American? There's an undeniable force to this appeal, but there's something about it I don't find quite persuasive. The appeal works to the degree that Mormons are able to represent Mormonism as an ethnicity. Clearly, Mormons are persuaded by that representation, especially those who live in the Mormon cultural region. Mormons often compare themselves to Jews, in the sense that they see Mormon, like Jewish, as both a religious and an ethnic identifier. The problem with the claim is that of all the groups that people on the street would think of as ethnic groups, I'm setting aside any technical, sociological definition of ethnicity, I cannot think of a single ethnic group, and that includes Jews, that sends missionaries all over the world encouraging everyone they can to convert to their ethnic group. Given how well known Mormons are as a missionary church, how many non-Mormons are really going to be persuaded by the multiculturalist appeal on behalf of LDS cinema? In other words, how many non-Mormons are going to be persuaded that LDS filmmakers just want to tell their stories without proselytizing? For that matter, given how fundamental the missionary imperative is to Mormonism, to what degree are LDS filmmakers really able to separate a multiculturalist goal like telling our stories from missionary objectives of various kinds, like promoting gospel values and entertainment, or creating positive public images of Mormons, or providing alternatives to the immoral fare of Hollywood, or increasing Mormons' visibility and cultural status? It wouldn't be hard to make a case that LDS cinema does all those things. If these are purposes of LDS cinema, then why aren't LDS filmmakers and distributors more overt about this? Does this reveal a lack of clarity or self-awareness on the part of LDS filmmakers? a fear of alienating potential audiences and allies, a certain ambivalence, maybe, about Mormonism's reputation as a missionary church, a sense that Mormons are still in too precarious a position to openly avow the militancy of conservative Catholics and evangelicals. Then again, what if we accept the analogy between Mormons and Jews? How do the aims of LDS cinema compare to those of Jewish cinema? At the level of numbers, the Mormon-Jewish analogy shows some promise. According to the most widely used estimate, there are about 13 million Jews in the world, a figure not much higher than the membership claimed by the LDS Church. However, if we compare the number of LDS film festivals to the number of Jewish film festivals, a startling discrepancy emerges. There is, to my knowledge, a single LDS film festival, the annual LDS Film Festival in Provo, organized by Christian Vuiza. Let me interject, by the way, that my best hope for the future of LDS cinema is film festivals like Christian Vuiza's, because it seems to me that those are the places where shorts and documentaries can find audiences, and it seems to me that those are the forms where I suspect that LDS cinema shows the most promise, rather than full-length feature films. Sorry for the little aside, my little soapbox. In contrast to the single LDS film festival serving the world's 12 million Mormons, there are over 60 Jewish film festivals around the world, and one source I've seen puts the number even higher at over 100. How do we account for this difference? Are Jews more interested in Jewish cinema than Mormons are in LDS cinema? Do Jewish film festivals attract more interest from non-Jews than Mormon film festivals attract from non-Mormons? Are Jews more interested in organizing and patronizing such events than Mormons are, or perhaps more adept at organizing them? Has the centralized nature of Mormonism discouraged the kind of independent cultural activity that a film festival exemplifies? Are there more Jewish filmmakers? Is it that Jews have played a vastly more prominent role in world history than Mormons, and thus Jewish characters and issues are more likely to become the subjects of films? Might it be that the definition of Jewish cinema is broader than the definition of LDS cinema? I'm not in a position to offer definitive answers, but I do find it helpful to look more closely at the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, one of the most important Jewish film festivals in the world, and possibly the first. I'm not quite certain about that. The San Francisco Festival was first held in 1981 with financial support from three institutions: the Judah L. Magnus Museum, the American Film Institute in D.C., and the UCLA Film Archives. The value statement of the San Francisco Festival commits the festival to an ongoing exploration of what it means to be Jewish, and to showcase films that will draw a diverse and inclusive audience, including affiliated and unaffiliated Jews, Jews who may be alienated from traditional Jewish institutions, and non-Jews. The festival also seeks to present images of Jews that serve as a counterpoint to Hollywood images and negative media stereotypes. The festival is not shy of controversy. It has hosted panels to discuss films that address contentious issues, especially around the Israeli occupation of Palestine. When I tried to compare the mission of the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival to that of the LDS Film Festival, I discovered that the LDS Film Festival has no mission statement, or at least doesn't make a mission statement available on its website. That immediately made me wonder how clear the organizers of the LDS Film Festival are about their objectives. Be that as it may, how many of the planks from the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival's mission might apply to the LDS Film Festival? Does the LDS Film Festival pursue an ongoing exploration of what it means to be Mormon? Does it reach out to a diverse and inclusive audience, including active and inactive Mormons, Mormons who may be alienated from the LDS Church, and non-Mormons? Does it present images of Mormons that serve as a counterpoint to Hollywood images and media stereotypes? Of what I've said so far, that last objective sounds to me like the only one that's a strong fit. Would the LDS Film Festival host panels on controversial films? Films about gay Mormon experience, for example. If the LDS Film Festival reflected a decidedly broad conception of LDS cinema, that is to say, if it had objectives as inclusive of those as those of the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, might it be able to secure financial support from local, state, or even national institutions like museums, universities, or the American Film Institute? Then again, could an LDS film festival as diverse and challenging as the kind I've just gestured to succeed in Provo, Utah? Could it succeed anywhere? If not, what does that tell us about the LDS community and what it expects LDS cinema to do? A final consideration. As I prepared to write this paper, I was surprised to discover that Saints and Soldiers and Napoleon Dynamite are often referred to as crossover LDS films. This surprises me because neither film has overt LDS content. Saints and Soldiers has apparently LDS characters who are never explicitly identified as such, while Napoleon Dynamite has no obvious LDS references whatsoever. By contrast, the gay-themed film Latter Days, which was made by a return missionary and is centrally about LDS characters, is not usually treated as LDS cinema, though I noticed that you treated it as such in your list. The definition of LDS cinema elaborated at LDSfilms.com specifically excludes Latter Days. The fact that Napoleon Dynamite would be claimed as LDS cinema, but not Latter Days, strongly suggests that a principal purpose of LDS cinema in the minds of many Latter-day Saints is to enhance the cultural status of Orthodox Mormons. In other words, Napoleon Dynamite becomes an example of LDS cinema because it's a film that active church-going Mormons can point to with pride and say, our people did that. MTV, Arbiter of Cool, has put its name on a film written by church-going Latter-day Saints. And it's a film Latter-day Saints can go see without feeling guilty the next time they take the sacrament. And most important of all, non-LDS audiences loved it. With apologies to Sally Fields, they like us. They really like us. Of course, LDS audiences were not nearly so flattered by the enthusiasm of gay audiences for Latter Days. Unlike the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, most Latter-day Saints, it seems, are not prepared to accept a definition of LDS cinema that encompasses stories told by disaffiliated Latter-day Saints. Latter Days fails to promote unspoken ends of LDS cinema, to promote Orthodox Mormon morality, and to enhance the cultural status of Orthodox Mormons. On the other hand, Latter-day Saints might take heart from knowing that Barbara Nicolosi and Dave Cristiano would be sure to hate Latter Days, too. And that reveals something important. That despite efforts to pitch LDS cinema as analogous to Jewish cinema or other minority cinemas, a stronger analog is actually conservative Catholics and evangelicals who are alienated from Hollywood and committed to evangelization. People concerned about the future of LDS cinema would probably be well advised to achieve clarity about which analogies best apply and to frankly discuss the implications of that fact.
Passionate about what I do is I think that cinema is the most powerful and greatest art form that humanity that has evolved within humanity. I don't see anything. I love sculptures. I go to museums like crazy whenever I'm in a new town. I go see, and I love paintings. I love sculptures. I love music. But I have never been moved by any other art form the way that certain films have moved me. They've gotten into me. They've touched my soul in a way that nothing else does, and that's why I am committed to it, and that's why, in my efforts, I want to use this as a way to express something that's within me. I am Mormon, therefore, things are going to come out with a little bit of a Mormon accent, and I think that's where Mormon cinema is. And I see us when we start to talk about, and I'm not, and the comments that we had are wonderful. I thought their comments were, John Charles's insight was fantastic. John's enthusiasm and information were great, but I cannot get away from the fact of when's the last time you saw somebody standing in front of a Matisse painting or a John Singer Sargent painting and heard them and overheard them say, I wonder how much it cost him to make that painting. And then what did he sell it for? So how much was the profit? For some reason, in our current American culture, which of course, because it's the current American culture, the Mormon culture adopts it, or absorbs it. That's the way we think about it. You see, I think that's the secret, and that's how Mormon cinema is someday going to be something when the Mormon people understand that it's a personal art form, just like any of the other art forms that we recognize as such. Back in the late 1990s, when I was so passionate, walking around talking to people, trying to promote the idea of a Mormon cinema. I fell into a lot of the categories that John Charles was talking about, and I still, in my idealistic moments, I believe that it can happen. But although I'm still relatively young, my idealism is fading away, and I'm starting to believe, just like the United Order and Brigham Young or what else, you know, whatever else has come up in Mormon, in our Mormon culture, the ideal is just not going to happen because the rank and file membership of the church isn't going to let it happen. So it disturbs me. I understand the focus on the money. I understand why everybody needs to know how much a movie is. I don't think it's anybody's business except the investors and the production company how much a movie costs to make. I think it was a mistake when DeMille and others early on started using it as a marketing tool to say, we spent, you know, this many millions of dollars on a film, and that entered the conversation. Because frankly, you know, it's like asking somebody how much his salary is. You go, you know, that's how I feel when people come up and say, so what's the budget on your movie? I feel like saying, it's none of your damn business. For the first thing, do you like the movie? That's all I want to know about. Are you going to go see it? There seems to be a focus on that. All right, the things that in the late 90s that were interesting to me, the things that I saw happening that I thought needed to be corrected were, one, incorrect representations of Mormons in the media, always done by non-Mormons. So whether it's a TV show, the occasional Mormon character that show up in a film, et cetera, et cetera. As a film lover, I was always, you know, it felt like someone was doing violence to me whenever I would see a Mormon depiction because it wasn't accurate. It misrepresented. I felt like it misrepresented who I was and my people. So we had that. We had Mormons in the industry telling non-Mormon stories. So we had a lot of, you know, we have a lot of film professionals telling non-Mormon stories. Or we had these same Mormon filmmakers or Mormon producers taking Mormon stories, you know, whittling the Mormonism off of them and delivering them in a genericized form. So now, when we're now in 2006, when I start hearing people talk about what's going to happen to Mormon cinema and starting to use, especially, it's not these guys, it's the Mormon filmmakers themselves who, when they saw the success of God's Army, were suddenly like, oh, this is how you do it. We start telling Mormon stories. So run in that direction. When that doesn't start to work anymore, you know, we have a good hit like Napoleon Dynamite come along, and everybody's like, oh, that's how we do it. And so everybody runs along in this direction. But I'm finding us migrating to the position that we were in, say, 1994, where the Mormon filmmakers themselves who have the ability to tell these personal and clearly Mormon stories are deciding that that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is the way that, well, we've been doing it for decades and decades, which is having Mormons telling non-Mormon stories or taking Mormon stories and genericizing them, such as like Saints and Soldiers. When I heard, and again, I like the film, so please don't, whenever I talk about specific films, there are a lot of films that I really like, and there are things about Saints and Soldiers that I really liked, but one thing I did not like was hearing the director and producer bragging about having a Baptist gentleman come up to them after a screening and thank them for making a movie about a Baptist missionary. And they were talking about this as if it was something they were proud of. And to me, that angered me. You know, it angered me to think that you're just going back to where we were, you know, in 1994. We're going back to the same exact place. And my feeling is, you can hear I said I'm giving up Mormon cinema, and you get me riled up about it. But I feel like if there is a future there's certainly economic problems that could foretell doom for Mormon cinema. And here's the great thing, talking about Angels in America or Big Love, we're back again to non-Mormons telling Mormon stories. And we get all excited about it because it's outside validation in some form. I mean, depends on the story, but you know, it's so much more exciting for us to have John Heder in Napoleon Dynamite because there's outside validation, or have Steve Young throw a football in a professional football league than it is to see somebody in our own community telling stories from our own community to our own community. It's strange to me that we don't stand up and have a Mormon Chaim Potok, for instance, and say, and be proud of this. Instead, we're proud when one of our own does something that's not a particularly Mormon act or not a particularly Mormon creation. Again, don't take that as negative. I like Napoleon Dynamite. It made me feel old. I felt like, holy cow, you know, I don't really get this, but everybody else does, so my gosh, I'm getting old. So I think, frankly, I think the burden of if there is a Mormon cinema, and in a large sense, that's just an academic designation. If we're going to draw a line around something and call it Mormon cinema and give us something to talk about, that's one thing. But I think really what we're going to have or not have are individual Mormon artists in cinema. And I've recognized that that's the only thing that I have any control over whatsoever, because when I was preaching Mormon cinema and saying, look, you know, in 2000 when God's Army came out and said, look, there's a market for our films. We now have a market. We can tell our stories, these meaningful, you know, our doctrine, our history, you know, what it is to be Mormon. And people stopped listening after I said market. As soon as I said there's a market, that's what I feel like got across. And everybody ran out to kind of capitalize on the market and forgot about everything else that went along with it. So I think it's going to fall on individual artists, and I think Mormon cinema is going to be exactly what happened with Mormon literature, which turned to crap, pardon my speaking, but you have these brilliant lights. You have your Levi Petersons, you have your Virginia Sorensens, you have people like this who show up once every couple of decades and do something wonderful and brilliant, and we can rightfully claim them. But Mormon literature in general is a joke. What you see at Deseret Book is a joke. We could do the same thing with Mormon theater. You have these little bright spots, or Mormon painting, or Mormon sculpture. What we have are Mormon artists. We don't have a Mormon artistic tradition. And I think that's where we need to be focusing our attention, and hopefully encouraging other people. It's like, forget about Mormon cinema. It's gonna turn to crap just like all the other Mormon artistic movements. However, there may be people who are inspired by seeing some of these films, or by the conversation, that they will at some point produce some great work. So, I really, knowing the financial situation of Mormon cinema, know that over the next few years we're going to have a real dry spell, simply because a lot of investors haven't made their money back, haven't made any of their money back. A lot of movie theaters, you know, the grosses aren't very big, so it's harder and harder to get the movies in there. Same thing with retailers. The DVDs are selling less. So I see this shrinkage happening, and it's just the reality that we're going to have a dry spell, and it's going to be those, in a sense, it's good, because all the people that ran to the market when they just heard the market and suddenly realized, oh, we can play movies and we can be movie producers and movie directors and make money, people who are motivated either by the ego or the money, when that's gone, it's only going to leave the people who really have a passion to tell these stories, and that's a good thing. You know, I think the sooner we get the Hailstorm guys out of the business, the better. Yes, Kurt Hale has said that he's not going to make any more Mormon movies, but I don't believe that. I wish we could get it in writing, because what's going to happen, you know, their fantasy is that they're going to go out and make, you know, now that they've peed in the pool of Mormon cinema, they're going to go into a bigger pool and somehow be able to compete in that arena. For those of you who've seen those films, know that they cannot compete. You know, that level of craftsmanship or talent cannot compete in the wider community. So I believe that what they're going to do, of course, is when they can't play ball in the majors, they're going to come back to the minors and start peeing in our pool again. So. And that, however, by the way, that refers to a quote that I held on to for like 4 years. I wouldn't even say that except to my wife, and she said, don't you ever say that in the press. And then the Salt Lake Tribune called me on a particular ornery day, and they were asking me what it felt like to have created Mormon cinema in 2000 and to see what happens to it. And I said, what it feels like is I feel like I had this great big pool party. I just invited everybody over and said, hey, guys, let's all get together and let's do this. And people started jumping in the pool, and they peed in the pool. And then pretty soon the pool was full of pee. Nobody wanted to swim in it anymore. And the people who peed in it got out and said, you know what, we don't want to swim here anymore because there's too much pee in the pool. So that's where that analogy came from. So I just thought I'd lay it all out there for you. Those are some of my comments. I think one of the things, the reason I don't think, again, I don't think it. I would not like to see a Mormon cinema movement that did, such as Luke Films, et cetera, you know, acknowledging a proselyting approach to things, because again, I don't think that that's the I think usually people who say that, you know, people who usually say, we want family films, we're so tired of Hollywood garbage, usually those are filmmakers who don't have the talent or the vision to compete in the mainstream, and so they're using that as a, they're using that as currency in order to have an opportunity to make films. So besides that, though, I think, again, coming back to a personal cinema and beginning to recognize cinema as art is incredibly, incredibly important. And starting to think in this group, I'm not talking to, obviously talking to the choir mostly here, but what a film grosses does not, you know, net gross or gross does not equal the value of the product. And if you look at, for instance, the thing that some days, you know, I get pretty bummed out when States of Grace, you know, struggles to make as much money as Mobsters and Mormons does. Sure, that bugs me. But then, you know what? Then I open up the paper and I look at Big Mama's House 2, which, so I took, just as a little exercise myself, I took Big Mama's House 2, and then I took the grosses of all five of those films nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. And you could take pretty much any three of the Best Picture nominees, including the one that won, and add their grosses together, and it didn't come up to what Big Mama's House 2 did. So, you know, there's a different ways of measuring success, and I would like to see the Mormon community stop concentrating so much on what it costs and how much it made and how much it grossed, and because it will lead us to make the wrong kinds of movies. Because again, then you're like Burger King trying to fill an order. It's like, what do they want today, rather than as an art form, looking into your own soul and saying, what is it that I have to say? What is it that only I can say? Or what is it that only I'm interested in saying? And that's the future of Mormon cinema, if there is going to be one. And amen.
I'd just like to conclude with a couple of remarks. One thing especially that I wanted to respond to, and maybe some of you feel the same way, something that Richard said about the ability of film to move does seem to be stronger than other art forms, and I've thought about that a lot. I've wondered why that is for me. I personally feel that way, and I remember as a child sitting around a campfire and hearing an uncle tell stories, and that's kind of the analogy I think that film is for me, sitting in the dark, having a story told that's truly human, that's truly real, that's invoking the gods. It's a very primitive, immediate, forceful event, and film does that for me. I will watch a good film and avoid doing any other responsible act just because of the power of that experience, especially when it's a good film. I have to say that of all the films discussed here, for me, Brigham City is one of the most powerful films I've ever seen. And I have to tell a story I think is kind of funny. My son came home with a friend one day after school and found me sitting in the family room crying. And the friend got freaked out. And I didn't realize they were even there. I just heard the kids say, "What's wrong with your dad?" And my son said, "Oh, he's watching Brigham City again." and it made me laugh because it's that final scene. It isn't emotional as films can often be emotional, which is through cheap theatrics. It's something I didn't see where it was headed, and when it hit me, it moved me on a level that seldom happens, and I it's It's one of the few films that I can watch over and over again. Normally, if I've seen a film, I don't want to see it again because I know how it ends. And I watch this film over and over again because I know how it ends. And I don't know if we have the ability within us as a culture to produce more of those films anytime soon. I suspect not. And I'm saddened by that. Since my hopes were raised with God's Army, I have found myself often my language has deteriorated, and I throw things at the screen. The two, and I rent these. I don't see them in the theaters, but I'll rent many of these films that have been produced, and watch them, and find myself so angered by the cheapening of what we could accomplish, and that's all I wanted to say.
Can I say one last thing?
Certainly.
I always forget, and then my staff yell at me afterwards because they remind me that I do distribute the films also. And the States of Grace, which is this film, which I'm very proud of, is just opened 2 days ago or last night in several, like 9 new cities. San Antonio to Seattle and Fresno and San Diego right now. It's the closest that is playing here. And I'm struggling right now to get it in Ontario and don't know if I'll be successful or not in pulling that off, or possibly right in the middle of downtown in Hollywood, which is more likely. So I ask if you have any interest whatsoever that you check out this website, statesofgrace.com, and just check, you know, and see when, because as soon as we have a definite booking, I'll put it up there. And I'm going to come down for this one because it's an important one for me in Southern California. But if you haven't seen it, please do see it, because for whatever I say in these kind of things, what I really feel about Mormon cinema, you can see it when you see these movies.
I don't know. It just seems like there's an audience that everybody's missing, including us.
There is, but one thing that most people don't realize is that's an audience that's been nurtured and it's been created. The this large Christian audience, the marketing that went into Passion of the Christ, you know, is an enormous marketing push. I mean, they were screening the film for pastors nationwide, just any time they could get one. It was huge. And so it wasn't just like they put a movie out and suddenly everybody just went to it. It was almost perfectly executed, in my opinion. Narnia came along and capitalized on a lot of that, you know, kind of, you know, Gibson kind of cleared the trees and made the road, and then Narnia came along and paved the road. So that's something that's there that it's a little tricky for Mormons to work with that, because I tried with this, but it's interesting that, you know, there's so much prejudice against in a small portion of the Christian community that it's the Mormons aren't Christians thing, and don't try to tell us you are, and stop trying to trick us, and that kind of thing.
How's it done in Salt Lake and the Utah States of Grace?
It did okay. Yeah, nothing to dance about. It did on the not so good side of okay.
but it didn't do as well as God's Army then.
No, not at all. Not even close.
Did you attribute that to?
It's simply, there was something I didn't understand was when God's Army came out, I was right there because I was leading the distribution on that as well. When Brigham City came out, you know, that was the second one. And then I stepped away, I tried to get the Joseph Smith film going, and then I got this film and the next one financed, so I was making those films. And when I came back, so between Brigham City and States of Grace, about 20 other films had been released in this market. And I had been largely absent from it. I was trying to keep tabs on what was happening. But when I came back in and started marketing States of Grace, the difference in interest, enthusiasm was, I mean, it was one-tenth of what was happening back in 2001. To the extent where I would, and what I learned really quickly, because I had to figure out what was wrong with this, ran into Robert Kirby, who's a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, and he had talked to me earlier about how much he loved Brigham City and loved God's Army. And so the movie had been out for 7 or 8 weeks, struggling, and I ran into him in downtown Salt Lake, and And he said, "Oh yeah, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen States of Grace yet." I was like, "Why?" And he goes, "Well," and I said, and then I was kind of pushing him on it. And I said, "You know, you really like the other two movies. You knew that I had made this one. Why didn't you go to it?" And he said, "Well, the truth is, I just thought, you know, it's just another crappy Mormon movie." And I hit up against that constantly, where I had to, which is one of the reasons I came out in the newspapers and started saying, "I am not Hailstorm. I did not make Singles Ward. These are my two films, and this is my next one." Because whatever, there seems to be a collective understanding now in the Mormon community that these films are not good. They're poor quality. They're, you know, you're going to lose your $7 by going to them. And so for me, the challenge in marketing it was getting people, once they were in the theater, they love the movie, but actually getting them into the theater. I did a free screening at the Sarah Theater it's right in Orem, Utah. It's like Mormon Central. Free screening, advertised all over the place, radio stations. We were giving away flyers on BYU campus. This was like 4 days before the movie opened. 2 days before the movie opened. And we had about a third of the theater full. That's when I knew I was in trouble. And that's the struggle that it is now. And you see that ripple effect, of course, that obviously goes back to investors who lose their investments in these movies and don't want to do it anymore. But it also goes to movie theaters who, you know, they were excited after God's Army and Brigham City. It was like, wow, these are good movies. They bring in the money. Sure, we'll book them. And now, you know, I'm the one that's on the phone booking theaters, and it becomes a real chore of them having faith that if they book a film in Ontario that people are actually going to come to it. And the reason, I truly believe, it's not the novelty factor. If the movies were good, people would go to them, but they haven't been good. I mean, I do the same thing. Did I go pay to see Church Ball in the movie theater or Suits on the Loose? I didn't do it, and I have a vested interest in it. So what's the average person?
Basically sounded the death knell of gay cinema, which was really popular in the 90s and again in this decade as well. Basically the same thing that we're hearing with Mormon cinema, which was that it was very cliche and redundant, and it just played to that community. But what he liked about Brokeback Mountain was that it was a good movie that happened to have gay characters. And I think that's what Richard's films are like. Brigham City is a perfect example. It's a noir thriller type film that happens to have Mormon characters. I think that's the model we need to follow with Mormon cinema, not necessarily like Narnia or these others that kind of disguises Mormon themes. To me, the example of Narnia for us would be like Napoleon Dynamite, maybe, or Saints and Soldiers. So anyway, I think Richard's on the right track. He's already figured out that formula.
I want to say also that I don't think there's anything. I got to make it clear that I don't think there's anything wrong with a movie like Napoleon Dynamite or Saints and Soldiers. And frankly, I wouldn't even be so hard on the Hailstorm movies if that wasn't all there was. You know, what I worry about is everybody migrating to this idea of you know, Mormons in disguise in Hollywood, of you know, as if they're Czech filmmakers from the 1950s trying to sneak their messages out somehow. What I worry about is they're not being filmmakers who are going to sit down and, I mean, who are going to actually tell Mormon stories, you know. And this, that also feeds into the idea of Mormon filmmakers saying, we want to make decent family entertainment, blah, blah, blah. By the way, don't ever come up to me and say, you appreciate, you know, there's somebody out there making good family entertainment, because that's not what I'm about. Simply because, again, I think that's a tool used for usually people who can't make films to try to validate their efforts. But there's always going to be people out there who will do that. There's always going to be, you know, there will always be people who will be trying to make just good, clean family entertainment, good kids' movies, you know, somebody loses their dog. But if somebody's not telling the story about the Mormon bishops or the gay Mormons or the anything, you know, if somebody's not, or the young Mormons, you know, what's it like to be 14 and Mormon living in San Diego? I mean, there's all these stories, and if if we're not telling them, or if some Mormon filmmakers are not telling those stories, then either they'll never be told, or they'll be told by non-Mormons, and you know, which can be appreciated, but they just won't get to the heart of it, to the soul of it.
Another question?
Now, I love independent films, and I was interested in when John, you said King Kong didn't do so hot. Right, and I understand the box office is a measuring stick of some kind. Yeah, you know, and then some of them are winning Academy Awards, while the really interesting ones for the sophisticated audiences are winning the Academy Awards. I mean, what is the flaw? You know, like why is it, you know, that the stories aren't good anymore? Like, why are we rehashing the King Kong story? We're going, you know, and doing Chronicles of Narnia, which did really well, you know. Where is the flaw in the Mormon cinema or in telling these human stories and these complex, you know, I mean, any of you, John Charles as well. I mean, why, you know, okay, so we're not proselyting and there isn't this evangelical sort of, you know, thing going on with Mormon cinema either. You know, would that help? You know, what is the measure of success then? If that even made any sense at all, how can we measure the success of a film?
Well, I mean, I'll just echo what Richard said. Where this, I mean, I focused on the box office as a kind of a measuring stick, but at the same time, I mean, that's the way that the business looks at it. That's the way that his investors look at things. And if the movie doesn't make money, if it doesn't clear a profit, whether through distribution or through DVD or that type of thing, it's not a success. But you look at movies like God's Army 2, which I'm sure is, I can't wait to see. I mean, I can already kind of think in my mind, knowing his body of work, how it's probably going to end. And I can't wait for that moment in the theater to be affected that way, the way he describes. Anyway, that's a good movie to me. But box office, whether we like it or not, it's the way things are measured. So go ahead.
But okay, let me tell you a story. And this was like, this is what renews my faith in everything. And it's like, okay, I did the right thing, right? Because because I, in fact, when I made States of Grace, I thought, you know what, States of Grace and Falling, the film that comes right after it, I thought, these could very well be my last two films, could be my last two Mormon films, maybe my last two films if they don't do well. But I just said, you know what? I don't care. These are two stories that I am going to tell. And I don't care if I go down in flames. I'm at least going to have these two stories to tell. And so I did it. And for those of you who know, Brigham City did not perform well financially. States of Grace is not performing well financially. Falling is probably going to perform even worse. And so I'm just thinking, well, here's my artistic integrity, and what does it get for me? So Falling has lapsed Mormon characters in it, and I'll let people decide how Mormon it is. I think it's very Mormon, but it's not. It doesn't follow the Mormon aesthetic in any way. He's too old. I had thought of that, but he's too old. But let me tell you how I think. Out of the blue, I got a phone call from an individual who said, hey, I want to come meet with you. And he said, I might be interested in financing some of your movies. And it was my usual. I was like, yeah, right. Okay. But I'll be right over. You know, it's that same kind of thing. He's like, yeah, I'll be right over. And this was a person who has, you know, has some real financial means. And we sat down and we talked and he said, you know, he talked about how much he loved Brigham City. He saw States of Grace, blew him away. He's like nudging his wife saying, are you watching this? Are you watching this? He asked me how they're doing, and I'm pretty upfront, and I said, well, you know, this lost money. This one's going to lose money. The next one's probably going to lose money. And then he goes, yeah, okay, let's make one. And that's when I thought, it's going to work. You know, what it has to do is you have to find the people who are going to, instead of being Burger King, which is why I think a lot of the studios are having trouble, because studios have turned into basically a great big Burger King where they, you know, what do you want? Okay, trying to second guess what people want rather than coming up with their own ideas, which if you look back even at George Lucas back in the 70s, you know, we think of Star Wars as being this, but that was his vision. That was one man saying, this is what needs to be done. This is what is going to do well. Nobody believing him, and then it worked. Right, so that's where my faith in cinema is in the individuals, and my faith in being able to make the kind of movies that I want to make is now in hopefully finding those with means who understand that maybe the films aren't going to make $10 million, but there are films that we're all going to sit back at the end and say, wow, we're proud that we made that. You know, we made a difference. We did something, you know.
I just want to say that in response to your question that I would like to see, well, and this is reiterating something I said in the paper, I would like to see a lot more documentaries. Back off feature films for a while. I mean, if you want to tell Mormon stories, let's do the documentary approach. First of all, I think it would encourage Mormon filmmakers to start looking beyond the usual stories. It would encourage them to start looking at other kinds of Mormon experience. And I think doing documentaries where you have, like, real life providing a sort of natural frame for what you're doing, or at least a natural constraint on the story, would prevent the problem I see in feature films, which is that Mormon filmmakers, when they start trying to tell stories, to make up stories, they have a tendency to replicate very Mormon patterns, which I think, well, they're evangelistic in ways that I think are just not going to connect with mainstream audiences. But a documentary, you have to find a story that's intrinsically interesting, and I think that, I mean, New York Doll is to me a really good example of what LDS cinema could be doing, the kinds of really interesting stories it could be telling, and stories that would have that, you know, that holy grail of the crossover appeal.
But aren't you saying that, again, you're talking about the films to the filmmaker. I mean, New York Doll works because Greg is a good filmmaker. He made a good film. I mean, if we were to say, okay, documentaries are the way to go, well, then we've got the Hailstorm guys jumping in, you know, wanting to make a documentary, and I can guarantee you the quality of that would be nothing compared. And we'd just have a bunch of bad documentaries, don't you think?
It sounds like documentaries because they're not financially lucrative in the same way.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not in the film industry or in the artistic community, or whatnot. I go to movies, I put down my money, and I like it, and I recommend it to others. And I guess, Richard, when you said that just a minute ago, that you make your movies and you do it without any compromise with your artistic integrity, I guess I would have to say that's the primary reason why I will go to one of your movies, whether it's been reviewed or not, because you've proven to me in the past that I can trust that you will have that kind of integrity, as well as the fact that I love your vision that you put forward in your stories. But the thing I think that would keep me and others of like mind away from the box office is if we get there and we feel like we've been cheated or contrived or manipulated, and marketing a lot of times tries to put the cart before the horse rather than the artistic integrity and a compelling vision. So for what it's worth, that's what will always get me in the theater and have me cough up my $7 in 2 hours at times.
Let me say one thing that I promised before. Told myself I'd never say in public. I'll just tell you, I won't tell you who said it. Well, let's just say a prominent LDS film producer. I was having a conversation with him one day where I was trying to encourage him to make better films, and I was saying, why don't you do that? You know, it's like you have the ability with a little bit more effort, you could actually, you know what's wrong with them, you know they're not very good. Why, you put your name on them, why can't you just put a little more effort into this and make something that you can be proud of that would be good? And he said something that just burned itself into my brain. He said, Richard, we could crap on a paper plate and our audience would eat it up. That's what he said. I mean, that verbatim. And that was offensive to me on so many levels. Zero respect for cinema. Zero respect for the audience. Zero respect for Mormonism. And fortunately, you know, I had nothing to say. I just kind of threw up my hands and went, well, okay. And it worked a couple times, and then fortunately the audience started to recognize that they didn't like the taste of his particular product, and but that was the kind of thing that we're talking about. You know, filmmakers who would say, "Look, we're Mormon filmmakers," try to get their product out into the community, and have zero respect for any part of the process. And that's why it frustrates me. It's like it frustrates me to even – you can't even have the kind of conversation that we're having today with people whose mentality is like that. So what did that mean? I don't know where that exactly came from, but you said something. Yeah, yeah. And another reason why it's hard for me to even go see another one of their films, because I know that they're not even trying to do something of quality.
trying to figure out how to formulate this exactly. There's something about what John Charles has been saying that's making me uncomfortable. I think it's this. It's the word evangelization and the way in which you're applying it to all of Mormon cinema, and I think you're including Richard's films in that. And by the way, I haven't seen any of the other ones because I tried to watch The Singles Ward and it sucked so bad that I had to stop and I just quit with them and never watched any of the other ones. So I can't say anything else about any of the other ones. But I think that there's a difference between a film telling a story and having a perspective which might be informed by some theology in some way and proselyting or evangelizing. And although I can't right now articulate that philosophical difference, I think I will be able to in about 3 or 4 hours. I know it when I see it, because I've seen some of that shit that the evangelical, these evangelical movies that have been put out. To continue with your metaphor, and that's not what I see. And I think an argument would have to be made that is going on in Brigham City, or that is going on in States of Grace. And it's not, because these are complex movies, they're complex characters, the stories are complex, but nevertheless, there is a perspective, there is a sensibility, a religious sensibility, and there's even a theology there to some extent. It's complex, it's not easy, it's not straightforward, it's not a discussion, and it's not being crammed down your throat. And in some way, it's that complexity of the story, the way in which it speaks to a reality. I mean, I can't tell you how close States of Grace was to my mission. People died in my mission. Almost everything that happened in that movie, in some way, was very, very close. And so the reality of it undercuts this idea that in some way it's evangelization, even though it is there's a clear theology, I think, in that movie, and the title of the movie, expresses that theology. So I think it's possible to have theology and values and a perspective inform a narrative, and yet the narrative be complex enough, maybe, and have that complexity undermine it being some kind of evangelization or proselytization. I hope I made the point.
Here's what I would say in response to that.
Wait.
I want to be clear that I'm not using the word evangelization in this context in a necessarily negative way. I'm also not equating it with proselytism. I would see proselytizing as one way that one could evangelize in a film, and it's a way I would not approve of, because it's very overt. But evangelization in cinema means something broader. It can mean overtly proselytizing. It can mean overtly giving an altar call. It can mean overtly scaring people that the rapture is going to leave them behind. Or it could mean we're promoting gospel values in film. It can mean we're trying to create more positive images of Mormons. It could mean we're trying to create a more moral kind of entertainment. And if you framed or defined those agendas in particular ways, I would support them. One thing I cut from the paper in the interest of time is that there are leftist versions of Christian cinema that define the Christian filmmaker's obligations in terms of standing in solidarity with the poor and oppressed, building community, promoting ecumenism. That's the kind of evangelization in film I would be inclined to support. What I want to say, though, is that I'm intrigued by the fact that LDS filmmakers, and I understand it's because they don't want to be seen as proselytizing, and they therefore try to define themselves as not doing any kind of evangelization, when they are. Your films evangelize. There's no question of it. I'm not saying they proselytize, but they evangelize. And the question then becomes, in what particular ways are LDS filmmakers evangelizing? And let's define those. And then let's start asking questions like, okay, so which theologies are informing what we're doing? Really, if this is the theology informing our film, which audiences is it really going to play to? Which audiences is it not going to be able to play to? Let's start thinking in those kinds of concrete terms.
Okay, can I follow up then? I think now I understand your point a little bit better. So what I want to say is that it seems to me then that every film
evangelizes to some extent. And it either evangelizes from a religious perspective or, in like from my perspective, preferably many, you know, from a leftist perspective, like V for Vendetta I loved. And it was very evangelizing, you know, obviously. And so what we ought to be doing is you know, looking to telling stories that in some way support the kinds of, you know, political agendas and values that we have. It seems like to me that's where you're going with this. And you know, for example, I radically oppose the theology and the political agenda that's behind the Passion of Christ, because the way that whole thing is set up, it's a kind of understanding of the atonement which is vicarious. You know, Jesus has to suffer for everyone's sins, so it's got to go on for about 25 minutes on the screen, and it's got to be, you know, masochistic S&M type, you know, basically a snuff film, because that's the theology that it's expressing. And it seems to me that if your very broad characterization of evangelization, it's impossible to avoid it.
Well, I would insist on the passion.
Yeah, I struggle with this because, again, I try to come from a point of trying to just express something and recognizing and not shying away from any culturally specific elements or, you know, religious elements. In fact, I use religious iconography and things to try to help express something that's within me. But religion in our contemporary society carries such baggage that we're playing on a really uneven field.